Good morning, everyone, and welcome. Welcome to the people sitting here in the pews, and welcome to those joining us on the web camera. And especially welcome to those members of the congregation who, there are several of them who aren't that well at the moment. I hope they're making a good recovery. Just to say that during the week we heard of the death of Shirley Wright. Now, Kenneth Wright was minister at this church for about 30 years until the early 1990s, and Shirley was his widow. Our opening words. Come into this circle of community. Come into this sacred space. Bring your whole self. Bring the joys that make your heart sing. Bring your kindness and your compassion. Bring also your sorrow and your pain. Bring your brokenness and your disappointments. God, Spirit of love and mystery, help us to recognize the spark of the divine that resides within each of us. May we know the joy of wholeness, and may we know the joy of being together. Our chalice lighting. We light our chalice in solidarity and compassion with the people of Syria and Turkey. We light it in honor of more than 28,000 people who lost their lives last week, and in honor of those working to rescue survivors. May we reach out in whatever way we can to alleviate the mountain of their suffering brought about by the power of the earth. Our first hymn this morning is hymn number 12, O Life That Maketh All Things New. Let us pray. We pause in reverence before the wonder of life, the wonder of this moment, the wonder of being together, so close and yet apart, each hidden in a secret chamber, each listening, each trying to understand. Yet no one fully understanding, and no one fully understood. We pause in reverence before all intangible things that the eyes see not, nor the ears detect, nor hands can never touch, and space cannot hold and time cannot measure. We seek a reality beyond our narrow selves that binds us in compassion, love, and understanding to other human beings and to the interdependent web of all living things. Lean your arms a while on the windowsill of heaven and remind yourself that this day is the best day of your life. May our hearts and minds be open to the power and the insight that weave together the scattered threads of our experience and help us to remember the wholeness of which we are part. Amen. Now let us say together words that attempt to articulate the aims of the congregation. They're in the back of our hymn book. Love is a doctrine of this church. The quest of truth is its sacrament, and service is its prayer. To dwell together in peace, to seek knowledge in freedom, to serve mankind in fellowship, to the end that all souls shall grow in harmony with the divine. This do we covenant with each other and with God. Gavin has a reading for us today.
The nature of God, according to Unitarian theology, and I'll tell you after I've read it, who or perhaps what wrote it. Unitarian theology is a religious tradition that emphasizes the belief in one God and the unity of all things. It stresses the importance of reason, ethics, and the search for truth over the acceptance of dogmatic beliefs and doctrines. In this tradition, the nature of God is not defined by specific attributes, but rather is seen as an underlying presence or force that pervades the universe and gives it meaning and purpose. For Unitarians, God is not a personal deity with a defined personality, but rather a spiritual essence that exists in all things. This essence is often referred to as the divine spark or the divine light. Unitarians believe that this spark is present in all people, and it is up to each individual to nurture and develop their connection to it. This connection can be strengthened through acts of compassion, justice, and the pursuit of knowledge. Unitarians do not believe in the traditional Christian concepts of the Trinity or the divinity of Jesus. Instead, they see Jesus as a great teacher and a moral example, but not as a deity that contains valuable, but not as a deity or the Son of God. They view the Bible as a historical document that contains valuable lessons and moral teachings, but not as a literal or infallible source of divine revelation. In Unitarian theology, the purpose of life is to develop a relationship with the divine and to use that connection to bring about positive change in the world. This includes living a life of ethical and moral responsibility, pursuing knowledge and wisdom, and working for the betterment of humanity. Through these actions, Unitarians believe that they can help bring about the realization of a more just and compassionate world and bring the divine presence closer to earth. In conclusion, Unitarian theology views God as an underlying presence or essence that exists in all things and gives the universe meaning and purpose. It emphasizes the importance of reason, ethics, and the pursuit of truth, and sees the purpose of life as the development of a relationship with the divine and the promotion of positive change in the world. So, you may have heard or read about AI, or artificial intelligence, and it's a field of computer science that focuses on creating intelligent machines that can perform tasks that normally require human intelligence, such as recognizing speech, making decisions, solving problems, and so on. In simple terms, AI is the creation of computer systems that can think and act like humans. And this can be done in a number of ways, such as by using algorithms and statistical models, as well as building systems that can learn from experience, like a human child. And the ultimate goal of AI is to create machines that can exhibit human-like intelligence and perform tasks that would normally require human intelligence. So it has the ability to compose credible-looking essays, recipes, poems, not very good poems, and lengthy answers to a broad array of queries. And essentially, it's fed vast amounts of information from the internet in order to train it how to respond to an equally vast array of queries. You can even give it a photo of your street, and it will recompose it for you with a fresh falling of snow or sunshine or a field of flowers. But of course, it's got its limitations. One academic recently said, I asked it about the diet of 11th century England, and apparently it consisted of potatoes and other vegetables. But of course, potatoes didn't exist in Europe until the 16th century. And this week, Google lost around $100 million when its share price dropped after its AI machine gave a wrong answer. So I logged into an AI machine on my iPad here, and I asked it, write 300 words on the nature of God according to Unitarian theology. Thank you.
Gavin, I could use that to write my next address. Thank you for the tip. Thank you for the tip. Could we have some children to the front, please? We have some children in the house today. This is for a story. We don't eat our children here. We're nice to them. Hi, everyone. Lovely to see you all here this morning. We love having children here. So we tell our children a story when they're here, but really we're telling it to the adults as well because they've never grown up. They're all children at heart. And this is a story about once upon a time. Oh, we've another young person. Parents can sit with them if needed. Yeah? Right. Hiya. This is a once upon a time story. Probably never happened, but we tell it to explain something. And there was a man, and he had a beautiful horse. It was absolutely gorgeous. And he used the horse because he was a farmer and he needed it around the place. And one day he went out, and his horse had disappeared. Just totally gone. Didn't know where the horse was. And he was upset. He searched for the horse. Absolutely no sign of it. And he was upset, of course, because he needed more help on the farm. And that evening, when his neighbors heard about the horse's disappearance, they came round to his house and they said to him, I'm really, really sorry to hear your horse has disappeared. You must be very upset. And the farmer said, well, is that good luck or bad luck? I don't know, he said. Let's see. Time will tell. And months went on. And one day he went out, and you know what? His horse was back. She was back in the field. And not only was the horse back in the field, but she had a lovely little baby foal with her. And when the neighbors heard of this, they called around to the man's house and said, you must be delighted. That was great luck that the horse came back and brought a foal with it. And the farmer, he never got excited about things. He says, Well, maybe yes and maybe no. So it was great. He had the horse and the foal. And as the foal grew on a bit, his son began to try and train this foal to make it useful working around the place. And he was riding the foal, and the foal was very upset about something and kicked him off. And the son fell and broke his leg. And at that time, it was very, very hard to get over a broken limb. And the neighbors called around and said, "I'm sorry to hear your bad luck. Your son broke his leg. That's really bad luck for you." And again, the farmer didn't get upset. He just says, "Well, maybe yes and maybe no. Who's to know whether it's good luck or bad luck?" Shortly, a few weeks later, while the son was still in bed with his broken leg, soldiers came. A war had broken out, and these soldiers came to get all the young men, fairly grown up, to take them off and make them fight in the war. And all the young men in the village were taken, except the young man with the broken leg, because he wouldn't be of any use to the army. So just to show you this story, that sometimes when we think, "Oh, it's great such and such a thing has happened," or we say, "It's not fair such and such a thing has happened," we judge too quickly. Sometimes something that we think is good may not turn out so good, and the opposite can be true as well. So we're going to have Sunday Club. Katie and Denise, I think, are taking them down. Is Katie, yeah? No, Katie and Dory are taking them down to Sunday Club. If they want to go, if they're able to go. And the parents can go down if they want it as well to settle them in. For my reading, I've chosen a piece. It's from a book, Finding Peace, it's a compilation by Sister Stan. And this piece is contributed by Luca Bloom, the songwriter and singer. It's called Surrender. Peace. It's a great little word, in fairness, like love. Often they come together, peace and love. I want peace. I want peace everywhere. Peace of mind is the greatest gift of all. But it can seem like a luxury item in a world where there is so much work to be done. If I'm sitting quietly in meditation or playing music, wouldn't I be better out in the world easing suffering? If I'm reading a book, wouldn't I be better doing something more useful for the world? Finding peace is a struggle. Why? Because of another word, shame. How can I be at peace when climate change is upon us? How can I be at peace when there's so much inequality with the world? Shame blocks peace. In my case, the issue which rendered peace unavailable was alcohol, the sorrow and sadness accompanying it. The road back began a long time ago, but addiction of any sort is a resilient foe. The shame and the blues that come with addiction linger and find new ways to permeate the mind. With all this potential for chaos and depression, how can I ever find peace? The toughest mountain for me to climb is the fact that during my life I have caused hurt to others. This can grab my mind and hold me in a vice-like grip. It can own me for a day or a week and guarantee me no peace. Shame. This is for me why peace is elusive. And yet peace is not unattainable. I find peace sometimes, most days in fact. As is often the case, my path to peace is ultimately quite simple and lies in another word, and that word is surrender. A much maligned word, it is associated with weakness. It takes courage, humility, and honesty to actually surrender in life. I had to sink quite low to get to the point of surrender. But I did get there. And surrender is now a daily practice in my life. If I acknowledge the truth in my life, I find peace. If I surrender to the mystery of life, I find peace. If I accept the things I cannot change, I find peace. If I ask forgiveness for hurt I have caused, I find peace. If I forgive, I find peace. The path to peace for me lies in surrender, unconditional surrender. I craved control and had none. Now I have no control over any outcome, and somehow peace is possible. I stop fighting myself and the world. At the beginning of every day, I ask that I be kind, and at the end of every day, if I can identify kindness in that day, there is peace. I'm not a religious man, but every day I ask the God of my non-understanding to make me a channel of your peace, and then I surrender. For me, peace is not passive, it involves action. Accepting of life on life's terms, gratitude for life itself, kindness and surrender. Surrender. May peace be with you. Lovely words from Luca Bloom. Let us pray. And this is a meditation on peace. So just sit back in your seats. Your feet on the ground, maybe close your eyes and just think. We begin by wishing peace for ourselves. May I be peaceful, light and happy in body and in mind. May I be safe and free from accidents. May I be free from anger, unwholesome states of mind and worries. May I know how to look at myself with the eyes of understanding and love. May I be able to recognize and touch the seeds of joy and happiness in myself. May I learn how to nourish myself with joy each day. May I not be caught in the state of indifference are caught in the extremes of attachment or aversion. With these thoughts of peace for yourself, we now extend those wishes to the people we love in our lives. And we say, may they be peaceful, light and happy in body and in mind. May they be free and safe from accidents. May they be free from anger, unwholesome states of minds and worries. May they know how to look at themselves with the eyes of understanding and love. May they be able to recognize and touch the seeds of joy and happiness in themselves. May they learn how to nourish themselves with joy each day. And may they not be caught in the state of indifference or caught in extremes of attachment or aversion. Now, can we particularly extend those thoughts to the people who've been affected, 26 million about, the people of Turkey and Syria? May they be peaceful, light and happy in body and in mind. May they be free and safe from accidents. May they be free from anger, unwholesome states of mind and worries. May they know how to look at themselves with the eyes of understanding and love. May they be able to recognize and touch the seeds of joy and happiness in themselves. May they learn how to nourish themselves with joy each day. May they not be caught in a state of indifference or in extremes of attachment or aversion. Now we extend those same thoughts to embrace all living creatures. May all beings be peaceful, light and happy in body and in mind. May they be free and safe from accidents. May they be free from anger, unwholesome states of mind and worries. May they know how to look at themselves with the eyes of understanding and love. May they be able to recognize and touch the seeds of joy and happiness in themselves. May they learn how to nourish themselves with joy each day. May they be able to live fresh, solid, and free, and not be caught in the state of indifference or extremes of attachment or aversion. The title of this morning's address is Waiting for God, and just to stress that these are my personal thoughts, and I'm amazed at, you know, how the computer's version of God was so like mine. What does that say? In any discussion about the belief in God, it's important to keep in mind that everyone has the version of God they do or do not believe in. And very rarely do we ask anyone, what do you mean by God? We'll say, do you believe in God? And we expect a yes or no. We very rarely say, well, which God do you believe in? Within the Christian tradition, there are three elements of whether or not you believe in God. You're required to believe that God is the creator of the universe. Two, that from time to time, God intervenes in the affairs of humanity. And three, that God will reward or punish us when we die. And those sort of questions about God are also shared by the Muslim tradition. And I don't believe in that God. I'm happy to refer to the energy that initiated the universe as God, so I don't mind using the God word. I do expect that at the end of my physical life, I will go through some process of assessment about my life experiences. So I accept proposition 1 and 3. However, reason makes me reject the idea that God personally intervenes in the affairs of the world. It is these types of reservations that lead many Christian traditions to exclude Unitarians from the Christian family. Unitarian attitudes to God are also causing some tension within the non-subscribing Presbyterian Church of Ireland, to which this church is affiliated. This church became affiliated with the non-subscribing Presbyterian Church in the 1930s. When we joined, we did insert a conscience clause that we felt free to reject or accept any of their beliefs. So we can, in conscience, stay within the NSPCI. But I wonder if today we applied for membership of the NSPCI, whether or not they would accept us as members. Because in the intervening years, this community has developed and changed and now embrace beliefs that are probably outside of even very liberal Christianity. The Bible was once essential to worship in this church. Now it is one resource among many that we use in our services, and it is used less and less frequently. And when we do use the Bible, we approach it as poetry. And when it is used as poetry, it's amazing what we can learn from it, and how we learn how human nature repeats itself over and over again. But we do remember too that the experiences of individuals such as Abraham and Moses were interpreted through their understanding, through their life experiences, and through their ambitions for their nation. In 4,000 years, science has utterly changed how we understand the world. You know, at that time, the people believed in a three-storied world. Down there was hell, up here was earth, and up there was heaven. We know that that is not the way things are. When it comes to creeds and dogmas developed in the 4th century, they fail the test of reason. The Protestant Reformation that put the Bible at the center of Christianity did reinvigorate a Christianity that had become mired in superstition and was suffering the consequences of misuse of power through evil popes. But Protestantism is losing credibility in the face of biblical scholarship. We have to accept what is true. We can't deny and say the Bible is an absolute source of truth when we know it was the work of human beings. We must apply reason and science to ancient scriptures and teachings from whatever tradition, be that Islam, Buddhism, Hinduism, or any other faith system. We also need to remind ourselves that science does not have all the answers yet. We learn more and more, and what we learn gives rise to other questions, but we would be foolish to think that science knows everything. And of course, when it comes to understanding humanity, science is only scratching the surface of knowledge. We live with mysteries. All faiths and scriptures can offer us some wisdom about those mysteries. A song goes this, Nick Cave, I think, sang it, "I don't believe in an interventionist God." Well, last week's earthquakes definitely support that position. But why should we expect God to intervene? The events of last week were horrendous, but why should we expect God to intervene? You know, if we're honest, we want God to intervene. We want to do it on our terms. When we want something, we want God to do it. But we don't expect it. We shouldn't expect it. Someone once remarked that for some people, religion and religious life was that from Monday to Saturday, we sow our wild oats. And on Sundays, we go to church and pray that God will organize crop failure for our wild oats. God is the energy force that initiated the universe. That's what I find it easiest to think about. Religions have tended to make God into a Superman figure, one that we can bend to our thinking. Please, God, do that for me. And I think Christianity has really added to that idea of God as Superman by insisting on the divinity of Jesus. And it was interesting that during the week, the Church of England have announced that they're going to explore the possibility of not using male language when speaking of God. And of course, when this is reported, people have to balance, you know, the news has to be balanced. So they asked one priest what he thinks of that. And he said, "Oh no, bad idea. We use God and keep it male as it does in the Bible." And the other guy more sensibly said, "Well, God isn't a person. I don't think of him as a person." The other side of this coin is that we mustn't blame God for natural disasters. If there is blame for the more than 28,000 who died last week, it lies with human folly and ignorance, and that inappropriate houses were built on geological fault lines, and also on shoddy builders. Watching the rescuers on TV search for survivors, sometimes using their bare hand, to me is a testament of the godness that is within humanity. On the rare occasions when they found someone alive, the shout went up as one voice, "Allah Akbar, God is great. Cynics may ask, why did God not save everyone? But God does not intervene. It was good luck or chance that people survived. It was the work of the rescuers that people survived. The great blessing is that people were found alive, and the rescuers felt that need to express their thanks for the gift of a saved life. And they did it in their traditional way. Like, you know, when we say, even non-believers, something good happens, they tend to say, oh, thank God. They never say, oh, thanks. You know, it's just the traditional way. And in the midst of so much death, even one life must have seemed a miracle, something to be thankful for. Last week's earthquake was a reminder of the limits of our power to control the world. We are only part of the world of nature. We are not in control. In the reading this morning, it highlights the reality that often we're not even in control of our own behavior. And again, this is referred to in the same poll. He says, I find myself doing the things I don't want to and not doing the things I want to. I'm sure the gamblers and the alcoholics and other people with addiction say the same thing. In our own lives, even for those who are not challenged with an addiction, we prioritize wealth, success, and fame, thinking that they will bring us happiness. We know they won't. Doesn't stop us from trying, though. We know at the moment that our lifestyle is destroying the planet. But we want somebody else to make the necessary lifestyle changes. We want the planet to live. So we're hoping that God will come along and do something to save us. If we think God only as a superpower, ready to save the world, then yes, it's time to let go of that version of God. God is certainly not our Father who lives in the sky. We can think differently about God. We can conceive of God as energy that initiated the universe. And the amazing thing that the universe and everything in it, that includes us, is part of that great creative energy. We are part and parcel of the universe. As Emerson said, we are part and parcel of God. And when we live with this version of God, we are at peace. However, generally, we don't live in harmony with that creative energy. Because the energy that initiated the universe is life-giving, creative, generous, it's liberal. And humans are often destructive, mean-spirited, and insular. When we think of the wonderful gift of creation and what that gives to us, you know, with life in all its forms, and then we think to our reaction when refugees come into our country, and we wonder, are they getting more than we are? That's how mean-spirited we can be. Our lifestyle is destroying life on the planet. Absolutely against that creative spirit. As God did not sweep down like Superman to save the citizens in Turkey and Syria, he won't save us from our self-destructive path either. We are a part and parcel of God. It is we, the God in us, who must act. God is the rescuers who are digging in the rubble. God is found in the people who will donate money to help the survivors live through these cold nights and then hopefully rebuild shattered lives. So God is everywhere, creative, life-giving, and is found in those same deeds found within humanity. In this morning's reading, Luca Bloom talked about the idea of surrender. And when we think about surrender, I think sometimes, as he said, it seems to have a negative connotation for us. Surrender does not mean, well, that's the way the world is. There's a whole heap of misery and things wrong with it, and we surrender to it. It means doing what we can to change that, but then letting go. Sometimes it's hard to let go of, we want something good, what we think is good to happen for someone, but it's hard to let go just to do the deed and then let go. And that's one of the, I think, the drawbacks of religions like Islam that encourages people just to accept everything as God's will, rather than saying, that's the way it is, but we can make it better. And particularly Hinduism. You know, in a former life, you were miserable to everybody. Ergo, you should be miserable in this life. You know, it doesn't mean surrendering and accepting does not mean working to make the world better. I think it's worth re-listening to Luca Bloom's some of Luca Bloom's words. At the beginning of every day, I ask that I be kind. At the end of every day, if I can identify kindness that day, there's peace. I'm not religious, but every day I ask the God of my non-understanding to make me a channel of your peace, and then I surrender. And I like that phrase, God of my non-understanding. To me, peace is not passive. It involves action, acceptance of life on life's terms, gratitude for life itself, kindness, and surrender. Peace be with you, and God be with you. Amen. We're going to have our third hymn now, and we're having the offertory at the same time. And the third hymn is hymn number 123, Spirit of Life, Come Unto Me. our notices. Fair trade tea and coffee are served down in the Damer Hall. Everyone is welcome, particularly visitors. There's a meeting of the Managing Committee via Zoom tomorrow evening at 7:30. Wednesday, the lunchtime service of reflection is 1:05 to 1:35, available in the church and on the web camera. The book club meet on the last Wednesday of the month, that's the 22nd of February, at 7:30, and this month's book is Girl, Woman, Other by Bernardine Evaristo. The 22nd of February, too, is also the beginning of Lent. Now, we have sort of encouraged people maybe to think about doing some fasting during Lent. We wouldn't dream of imposing anything on anyone, but just as a practice to make you feel better. And we will have our box on the table for people to donate money to Christian Aid. We usually send the money to Christian Aid. But this month I heard of a different idea for Lent. And I thought, do you know what? This is worth exploring. It's a carbon fast. And the idea is that during Lent, you reduce the amount of carbon you use. The website is Carbon Stewards, Stewards. So they have suggestions like week 1 and 2, only buy things you really need. Don't buy anything extra. Next week, cut down on meat and dairy products. Another week, cut down on cheese, chocolate, or coffee. Another week, limit your time in the shower. Have a fast from driving. A fast from computer screens. I just think these are easy. That website is Carbon Stewards, and I just thought that's a good idea for Lent. In March, we're going to have a book sale in the Damer Hall, and it's a time to sort of sort through your books and get a pile that you can bring in to us and we can sell and give the money to charity. Lena Cockcroft, who is the current moderator of the non-subscribing Presbyterian Church, is going to visit Dublin and take the service here on the 5th of March. Andy wanted to say something.
Next Saturday in Dublin, there's a big anti-racist, pro-refugee demonstration in Dublin to counter all the anti-refugee process that have been around the country in recent weeks. It'll be assembling in Parnell Square, I think around 12 midday. You can check from the papers. It would be nice if some people would from this church could be on it. If you wanted to march behind the Places of Sanctuary Ireland banner, which is the small welcoming organisation that I'm involved in, we are meant to be, we are recognised as a church of sanctuary, so it would be nice if some people from this church could come to that. Next lunchtime, leaving Parnell Square, Saturday. Thank you. Next Saturday lunchtime, leaving Parnell Square.
Thanks, Andy. Our final hymn this morning is hymn number 121, We'll Build a Land Where We Bind Up the Broken. Hymn number 121.
Thank you.
I am only one, but I'm still one. I cannot do everything, but I can do something. I must not refuse to do that something that I can do. Amen.